morning, Mother Earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father Sun. Thank you for feeding all living things on Earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit, that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Welcome to Shaman's Keep. This is Caroline Wise King, your host, and I have a very exciting guest joining us today. We're going to get into the real nitty-gritty of shamanism. I've talked with you just a little bit about healing shamanism, and yes, we do use drums. I know this probably brings to mind cartoons we've all seen of a wild-looking loincloth primitive man jumping around beating a drum, implying that these are really ignorant childlike humans who don't know what they're doing. However, in recent years, science has discovered that a steady, monotonous drum beat of about 4 to 7 cycles per second actually creates a brainwave pattern that drops one into an altered state of consciousness. So those primitive medicine men knew something that the rest of the world had yet to learn about. Ancient shamans used to say they rode through the spirit worlds on their drums. Now we understand that the drum beat keeps them in the altered state of consciousness that allows them to enter and stay in the spirit worlds long enough to make contact with healers in the higher realms and facilitate healings. Dr. Michael Harner, an anthropologist, was studying a tribe deep in the Amazon when he became aware that the medicine men were curing diseases that we have no cure for in the United States, in spite of all our technology and medical breakthroughs. He became fascinated by the power that these medicine men seem to be able to tap into, and he decided to study shamanism worldwide. After tracking down and studying the handful of actual shamans left in the world, he came back to the United States, wrote the book The Way of the Shaman, and formed the Foundation for Shamanic Studies. He was convinced that this information was too valuable to be lost to the world, and he dedicated his life to making the knowledge of shamanism available to everyone. Today, we have we're very fortunate to have with us Susan McKelkey. She is Executive Director of the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, Editor of Shamanism Annual, which is the Foundation's journal, teacher of such advanced courses as the Pacific Northwest 3-year intensive program in advanced shamanism, and she is also a singer, songwriter, and author. So hello, Susan. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Carolyn. Thanks very much for inviting me. It's a privilege to be here.
Oh, well, it's wonderful to have you. Now, for our listeners who may not be familiar with the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, would you please just tell us a little bit about what the Foundation does?
Well, the Foundation for Shamanic Studies has its mission is the preservation, study, and teaching of shamanic knowledge for the benefit and welfare of the planet and all of its inhabitants. And so that's a fairly ambitious mission that we have. But it's based on, again, as you were talking about, it's based on Michael Harner's vision and his work as a world-renowned anthropologist. And so our purpose really is to bring this shamanic wisdom forward, to bring it back into the consciousness, particularly of the Western world, where it was lost ages ago in Europe through the Inquisition and other kinds of things, and then more recently, as we know, through a lot of the the destruction of habitat, et cetera, from a lot of indigenous peoples. And so his vision really was to bring this ability back to the Western world. He talks of it a lot of times as restoring spiritual democracy to people, because training in core shamanism, which he originated and developed, is the thing that allows people to access these higher realms, these spirits that are available to all of us if we know the methods. And they are sources of wisdom and compassion and love that is very essential to solve the problems and things that we have today. The other aspect of the Foundation's missions are, again, to help indigenous peoples however we can. One program we have is called the Living Treasures of Shamanism, which is very dear to Michael's heart, and that is to provide a stipend to master shamans whose wisdom is in danger of being lost, to allow them to continue their practice and hopefully to develop apprentices and continue their knowledge in its context. And then, of course, we have a huge archive, a library, which we call the Shamanic Knowledge Conservatory, which has thousands of accounts of the first journeys by Westerners using the methods that Michael Harner developed. So it's a pretty complete package.
Yes, it's amazing. I came across shamanism in the early 90s and it's strange. I had been a seeker all my life, and I had sought through every religion and every philosophy. Well, I thought I had gone through all of them.
Mm-hmm,
the one
right.
thing I had not considered the one thing I had not considered was shamanism, and I had reached a point where I was an associate pastor in a metaphysical church, but I felt like I had reached a plateau, and I didn't know. There was something more, but I couldn't imagine what it was. And I took a sabbatical. And during that time, the Great Spirit led me into shamanism. And it was like coming home. It was when I did my first journey at one of Dr. Harner's workshops, I think it was February of 1994. It was like I had come home. This was it. This is what I'd been searching for.
Right.
And you know, thanks to Dr. Harner, thousands of people all over the world now take the classes and learn the basic tools for accessing their teachers and their power animals in the unseen world. We have so much spiritual help available to us that it's just amazing. Now, for those of you out there who may not have been exposed to the power of shamanism, it may sound airy-fairy, like something only uneducated, superstitious people would believe in, but I can tell you from personal experience that the people who take these classes come from all walks of life. They include doctors, psychiatrists, businessmen and women, attorneys, teachers, etc. Many highly intelligent, well-educated people have embraced shamanism. Susan, you were an attorney, weren't you? And then you worked with another nonprofit.
Yes, I started off I'm a fallen away attorney, as they say. I started off my career long time ago in the 70s practicing law. I worked actually in Los Angeles. I grew up in the Los Angeles area, and so I worked for a law firm and at that time. And I discovered after practicing for not a very long time that it just wasn't satisfying some need or some spiritual process in me. And so I had access at that time to another educational nonprofit group that was educational but spiritually oriented, and I decided that I needed to go in that direction, which I did. But I have a funny story about the kind of people that are involved in shamanic work, at least as taught by Michael, because it's just sort of funny.
Mm-hmm.
As a lawyer, of course, there's always part of my brain that sits there and says, oh, this is interesting, this is different, this is funny, this is strange. And so when I was first taking workshops with Michael, I took several weekend workshops, and then I decided that I would go into, that I needed to take the two-week shamanic healing intensive, which is basically mm-hmm. what it sounds like. It's 11 days where you go and you learn all of the basic core methods of shamanic healing. So it's very focused on mm-hmm. that. And so I went there with some anxiety. It was held in, I believe that was up in Oregon at the time, near Portland. And I went with some anxiety thinking, here I'm trained as a lawyer and I'm going to go for 2 weeks and what am I getting myself into, et cetera. And so I went there and we were sitting down the first night at dinner and I happened to sit at a table. It was a sort of an institutional facility. So we had, you know, regular sort of 8x4 tables and we were all sitting there having dinner. And next to me was a pediatrician. Across the table from me was a brain surgeon, of all things. Mm. And then down the table was an engineer and another lawyer. And so I just all of a sudden I thought, you know what? We can't all be wrong about this. So I think we were all just searching for, you know, I mean, I think these days most people who are involved in just strictly Western practices realize at some level that there is something missing, that there's a part of ourselves that, and a dimension maybe of reality that somehow doesn't seem that we need to access, but we're not sure how. And that's where something like shamanism comes in, I believe. So.
Yes, it's amazing what a disconnect we have in the world today with nature and with the spiritual part of ourselves. People seem to have been completely not aware of their spiritual side. They've been programmed somehow to believe in only the physical world, what you can see, touch, taste, hear, measure, weigh, or whatever. And it's like there's nothing else. This is it. And that's only half of the equation. We are part body and we are part spirit beings. We are spirit beings having a physical experience. And when we're not connected with that spirit, that other part of ourselves, it creates a void that people keep trying to fill with something. They fill it with all sorts of addictions and just, you know, trying to satisfy that hunger that's inside themselves.
And material things, too. Material things.
Yes, yes, exactly.
A substitute for us feeling that trying to fill that hole that's not mm-hmm. fillable by that means, but we keep trying.
Yes. Well, you know, in the last few years, I had an experience that really kind of frightened me. I worked with some teenage boys, and I taught them a way of going to their safe place. It's a little different than the shamanism the foundation teaches. It's from Tom Brown Jr.'s teachings, but it's a very simplified form of going to your safe place, and you can ask your teacher to meet you there. So I taught them. I walked them in, you know, gave them a guided meditation in to walk through the gateway into their safe place. And I left them there for like 10 minutes, and then I brought them out. And when I asked them to share a little bit about their experiences in their safe place, they all said, well, we really enjoyed it when you were walking us in. We could see the trees. We could feel the air. We could hear the birds, all this. But when we went through the gate, there was nothing there. And every one of them had that experience. They said it was just a fog. They couldn't see anything. And I was like, oh, my God, we have a generation of young people that don't know. They've lost the ability to dream or to imagine what their perfect place would be like. Have you experienced any of this?
Well, you know, one of the things that we don't do, at least in core shamanism with the foundation, is that we don't compare different systems. So we wouldn't use guided visualizations, etc. But I know you're bringing up an example, but I was just trying to say, so I, you know, what I have seen is that there is definitely a sense that people, especially I think the whole visual medium has to a certain extent my personal opinion is, again, this is not a shamanic opinion, but my personal opinion that the whole dependence on visual media has, to a certain extent, not developed that essence in us that is ability to envision other things. So, for example, mm-hmm. I grew up reading. I was an avid reader, mostly of
me too.
Fantasy and science fiction and things like that. The words built the images, helped me build the images. And so had it been, I didn't like movies based on books I'd read, because oftentimes their images clashed with the images that I had built and had learned to love.
Right.
It's sort of an interesting thing. And so I think that right now I'm sort of involved with a lot of people who are interested in things like, you know, you might call them deep ecology and reconnecting to nature and helping children mm-hmm. reconnect to nature and things like that.
Yes.
And that, of course, definitely is seeing the beauty and the wholeness and the spirit that is in everything, which is a very mm-hmm. shamanic view. So I have some hopes that kind of thing is changing to a certain extent among younger people that I know. But then I know people who are sort of in the middle generation, between my generation and between the younger generation that now is coming up with a little bit more knowledge of that, who are totally blown away by the idea that there might be help available to them, that there might
yes.
be something beyond what they can see and touch.
Yes.
And that leads to a lot of anxiety and depression is what I've seen. So anyway, long answer.
Well, with the disconnect we've got, I think a lot of it has to do with the media, with television and movies and the computer and everything. I talk to a lot of young people and I'll ask them, did you read this book? And they'll say, no, I saw the movie. And I say, well, you know, the truth is the movies are great, but you don't get to hear what's going on inside that person's head. You're only seeing the surface actions of people. You don't get to go through their struggle to make a decision about what action they're taking or how they respond to something. And they look at me kind of blankly like, well, what's that got to do with anything? But, you know, it's this thing that, our technology is wonderful, but many of our young people have been bombarded with TV and media since they were born. And they have kind of not had time to do daydreaming like we used to do, or to read. They don't seem interested in reading that much because maybe they can see the movie instead. So this disconnect is something that we really have to make people aware of, and people have to get back to nature and back to the spirit of things. Don't you think?
I agree entirely. I think it's interesting. Started working with the foundation, and before I got involved in shamanism, for most of my adult life, I worked with a nonprofit educational foundation, a wonderful organization, actually. And the basic premise of that organization was built upon the idea that everything is one and interconnected mm-hmm. and interdependent.
Yes.
And so if that is in fact true, and that was the premise we built things on, then mm-hmm. how would you relate to nature? How would you relate to, you know, to your fellow human? How would you relate to animals, plants, the whole system? And how would you relate as countries to each other if you really understood, really at a deep level understood that everything was one?
Yes.
It was a wonderful experience working with that. Our approach was experiential, but it was also educational. And it's very interesting to me that I have felt connected with that premise for most of my life. There was a sense of being part of something and the importance of being connected and being part of something. But it wasn't until I got into shamanism, which is, for me, one of the most important things about the shamanic experience is that in the shamanic world, you don't just know something with your mind. You don't just even know it with your heart. You know it with your whole being because you've experienced it. You've been there, and you can see and experience the oneness of all things. And it's such a deep reconnecting, and you're never alone then anymore. Michael Harner had actually wrote an article called We Are Not Alone, and he wrote that saying that we're not alone, meaning that there are spirits present that can help us. But for me, I translated that in my experience has been is that I'm never alone. I'm never abandoned. I'm never without resources. I'm never without some place I can go. No matter how bad things get, there is help available to me. Not always the help I want, but it is typically the help that I need. So
absolutely.
A wonderful process. Mm-hmm.
It is. That's the wonderful thing about learning how to journey and go into those other worlds, to be able to actually sit down with your teacher and ask questions and have a conversation. And, you know, and they are the greatest teachers in the world. I mean, once you have the tools and know how to approach your power animals and your teachers, there is so much wisdom available to you and so much help. It's just amazing. I can't imagine not having that available now. You know, it's become such a way of life for me.
I've experienced it that I don't know. It's just it changes you at such a deep level, and it to me it's the thing that I guess, like as you were saying, that somehow my soul was looking for this, and it was looking for this connection. And
yes,
there are other ways of connecting, I know, but for me, the shamanic methods, especially the core processes that Michael developed so and originated so beautifully based upon his anthropological knowledge, are just, they're just amazing. And I have seen, just from my experience in teaching the work now for a long time, I've just seen so how so many different kinds of people get so much out of doing these methods, which are relatively simple when you come down to it, you know, relatively simple. And just amazing, you know, you were talking about the development of drumming, and it's when Michael came back from his trips to the Amazon and decided that this was very important information and something that needed to be returned somehow to the West, he at first thought it was going to be based upon plant medicines.
Right, ayahuasca.
And that's what he was looking for. He did a lot of research, and of course he was out in the 60s with, he knows so many interesting people, it's just so funny.
Timothy Leary.
He knows so many of the icons of the... of the world. It's sort of funny to hear him, you know, just talking casually about some of these people. But anyway, he when he came back, and he quickly discovered in searching around that over 90% of the world's shamanic peoples use rhythmic percussion sound. And so instead of plant medicines, they don't use them at all. They may use them for you know, something like almost like recreation at one level, you know, but they don't use them for actual shamanic journeying and for healing and for those kind of processes. They use rhythmic percussion sound, which, as you were talking about, is in the theta wave. But Michael discovered the proper drum beat typically just by experimenting, which is one of his wonderful characteristics. He has intense curiosity, and he's very open, and he makes these wonderful connections that most people don't miss because they have either things in a narrow box or they're trying to prove something that's not true. But he's just very, very open. And so he experimented with this, and he found, and he ultimately came up with what is now we call the, what, well, what they call the theta wave thing. And so he's the one who really convinced people that this is the way that you do it. And so, I mean, most people now, Westerners that you see out there practicing shamanism, owe their legacy, if you will, to Michael Harner's work. So, he's an incredible pioneer. So, as you can see, I think he's a fascinating person. You know, he's one of the interesting figures of our time, I think.
Oh, he is, and he changed my life. He changed your life. He's changed so many lives.
Yeah.
We can't thank him enough for his curiosity and searching and wanting to know more and having the courage to bring this kind of information forward. Because I know at the time that he first started bringing it forward, there were some people that opposed it, said it was the devil's work. They didn't want anything to do with shamanism. And amazing that
there are always going to be, if you will, fundamentalists, either scientific or religious fundamentalists everywhere that oppose something like this. But, you know, because again, that's part of that narrow viewpoint. But you're right. He has shown tremendous courage in moving forward into this.
He has, and that's been wonderful. I would like to invite any of our listeners that want to call in to ask any questions or make comments. You can reach us at 1-323-203-0815. And I would, invite any of you interested to call us. And if you have any questions, today is the day to ask it while we have Susan with us, okay?
Fine.
Okay. Now, of course, shamanism, I think a lot of people don't even know what a shaman does. You want to enlarge on that a little bit about what we do?
Well, shamanism is basically a shaman, or we call them shamanic practitioners or shamanic healers mm-hmm. these days, because you don't name yourself a shaman. The
right.
public whom you heal names you a shaman if you actually heal. But anyway,
right.
shamanism, the shamans basically are those people who travel to other worlds in an altered state of consciousness. They travel to other worlds and they access spirits. And they bring back that kind of wisdom and or healing for the benefit of individuals or their tribe or their communities. So the basic issue of a shaman is the ability to travel, to go to what we now call non-ordinary reality, which was a term that was first coined by Carlos Castaneda. But mm-hmm. they travel to these worlds and they interact with spirits. And if they do that, then they are practicing shamanism.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, a lot of people, I don't think, know exactly what we do. Like, we do soul retrievals, power animal mm-hmm. retrievals, extraction work. Would you like to enlarge
the methods? Yeah, if you would like mm-hmm. me to say a little bit about that. So, the foundation teaches the core methods that Michael brought back, but these are all based on. They have to be universal or near universal for him to include them. And the methods that he found of shamanic healing, or what we call soul retrieval, is one that a lot of people may have heard of because it's been more popularized these days. But the idea of soul retrieval is that from a shamanic perspective, as you go through stresses and traumas, you can lose a bit of yourself, a bit of your essence, your spirit. And the shaman then can go and find this essence and bring it back to you. Now, if you lost your entire soul, of course, you would be dead. You wouldn't be in this
right.
body. But it's a very interesting, we're trying to find language to talk about something that's essentially in non-ordinary reality, but the idea is I like to think of it a little bit like a hologram, or sometimes I think of it like a light bulb. You come into this world as 100 watts, and you get knocked around until finally you're just giving off 20 watts. You're still the same light bulb, but you're not fully there, fully present.
Mm-hmm.
And so the shaman can go and bring back that extra part of you, if you will, and infuse it back into you, and that many people have found astonishing healing has taken place from being complete in that way. And then the other primary ways, you talk a little bit about extraction healing, and the idea of extraction healing is that, again, from a shamanic perspective, just as We can be missing part of our essence. We can also pick up essences, spiritual essences, if you will, and I use spiritual just to mean non-physical essences that are floating around in these realities. We can pick those up, and they don't belong inside us, and so they can cause illness. And once they're removed, oftentimes the person will receive a wonderful healing from that. Mm-hmm. And then you also talked a little bit about power animal retrieval. And power animals, that's a really beautiful, very simple in some senses, an elegant way of helping you to be able to exist productively in this world. And that is, a shaman can find an animal or a spirit. Again, this is always a compassionate, fully compassionate spirit, and bring back that spirit, who appears in the form of an animal, and infuse it back into the person, and then that animal can be a protector, can help people basically with their lives, because it's like having a wise, compassionate friend with you all of the time that can help you. So I think those are the three primary healing methods that we generally talk about in an introductory way. So
yes, and they're all so effective. I've been doing this work for close to 20 years, and it is just amazing to see the dramatic changes in people's lives. Now, you know, when I first took the basic course with Michael, the only thing we learned really, well, we learned how to journey, and we met our power animal, and we met our teacher, and we learned how to retrieve a power animal for other people. So, of course, when I came home from that, that was what I knew how to do for somebody else. So, so I talked about it. I was still conducting meditation groups at that time, and I talked about it at the meditation groups. And of course, everyone wanted to know what their power animal was and wanted me to retrieve their power animal for them. And I didn't realize, because this was all new to me, I had no idea how powerful it was just getting your power animal back. But I began to see dramatic shifts in people's lives just with that one thing. And I became aware that power animals have tremendous power. They can open doors. They can smooth the path ahead of you. They can support you and help you through difficult times. And I'm like, wow, this is just amazing. So, of course, then I was inspired to go farther with it, and I took the soul retrieval course with Sandra Ingerman, and it was unbelievable. I mean, three of us went to take that course together, and on the way up there, we were all laughing and happy and talking about, oh, we're going to learn soul retrieval. We had no idea how much healing was going to happen to us during that week. Because that's, you know, you can't become a healer until you've healed yourself. And we learned so much, and we went through so many processes of personal healing ourselves that it was just liberating and astonishing. And so this is something I can't talk enough about, that I'm in total agreement with Michael Harner. Everyone should learn how to journey and meet their power animal, meet their teacher, and actually experience this connection.
Right. It's an amazing work, you know. And the interesting thing about it is that, you know, you can talk about it and you can see results, but until you've actually experienced it and been there, that's why Michael's very interested in a project that he sort of wants to challenge sometimes just the scientific mind, because there are people who, if he calls them scientific fundamentalists, who categorically say, well, there aren't any spirits. You are delusional, or you're deluded.
Well, they're heavily programmed.
And so his answer to that is that to him is a faith-based science, because no one's ever proven one way or the other whether there are spirits. So the true scientific mind, the true scientific mind, would say, well, I don't know whether there are or not, but I will, but it needs to be investigated. And so they would embark on an investigation. And of course, once people have experienced the shamanic journey and really have gone into it fully and openly, most people can learn to journey and can contact those realms. Mm-hmm. Once they've experienced that, it changes your perspective entirely, because you suddenly you've never seen the ocean before, and now suddenly you're swimming in it, you know, and so your perspective really changes, and you have to find new languages and new ways and new ways of talking about things, and new ways of thinking about things, because you can no longer not you can no longer just discard it as, well, this isn't real, because you've been there.
You do have to have personal experience, I think, and that is what we hope more and more people will be open to receive, to actually want to learn something about it. I'm reminded of a story of Dr. Carl Jung, the psychiatrist, that he had studied astrology, and he was at a cocktail party, and someone who didn't believe in astrology came up to him and was ready to have this argument with him about it. And he said, I want to talk to you about astrology. And Dr. Jung said to him, well, have you studied it? And the man said, no. And he was a little irritable about it, you know, like, why should he have studied such a ridiculous thing? And Dr. Jung said to him, well, when you have studied it, come back and I'll be glad to discuss it with you. Because until you've studied it, you have nothing to talk about. Okay?
That's amazing. So, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the way shamanism is. Yes, if people haven't studied it, how can they judge it? How can they just immediately say, oh, that's nonsense? If you don't know anything about it, how can you possibly have an opinion about it? So,
And from, again, from Michael's perspective, the knowing about it is, since you can't really, you can study tribes. And in fact, that was one of the things that Michael did differently when he was first an anthropologist early on. The idea of an anthropologist was that you didn't go native. In other words, you were there as an observer and you didn't participate. Mm-hmm. And he got to the point in his studies where the peoples that he was with would not talk to him any more about their spiritual practices, because there was no way he could understand them by them talking with them.
Exactly.
The next step was for him to take to actually go into the practice and experience it for himself, and so he did, and there was I'm sure a lot of flack that came down. Now it's a little bit more standardized, it's more acceptable, I think, now that anthropologists actually get into the practices of the people in order to really understand them. So I think it's just a funny thing. The Western mind thinks that you can just through the mind understand everything, and it's not true.
It isn't. And we have so many misconceptions about the mind anyway. You know, most people think that the mind resides in the brain. And what I learned not too long ago, actually, on a journey for someone, was that we have thought fields in every part of our body. It's not just in the brain. I actually, I was journeying for someone for a healing, and my teacher began to pull things out of their knees and out of their elbows and out of their stomach, and I'm watching, and it was not intrusions. I've seen a lot of intrusions come out of people. And I'm like, what is that? What is it you're pulling out? And he said, there are thought forms, belief systems that are no longer viable in his life, that don't work for him anymore. And I'm pulling them out. And I'm like, well, why would he have them in his knees? And my teacher said, well, it's kept him from being able to move forward. And it's kept him, you know, hobbled, so to speak.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so I was amazed. I was astounded, because it had never occurred to me that we could be carrying thoughts in other parts of our body like that. So we learn something all the time in the shamanic world.
Right.
Our teachers are always showing us something new.
Well, the surprise of it is always interesting to me, too. And I guess I trust it more when I'm doing shamanic healings with clients. I really feel, you know, oftentimes, of course, after you've had a certain amount of experience, you have a sense of what might be happening and what might be going on for the person. And so I'm always gratified. Now I am gratified when I go to talk with my spirits about what the person needs, and they tell me something that's totally was totally different from my framework of what it might be, and then it turns out it has great meaning for the client. And so I find that learning, I think, from our Western minds, especially if we've been trained in a very heavily intellectual field or a scientific field, that learning to trust that other knowing that we have, that knowing, that part of us that connects with the spirits, that is open to their wisdom, to learn to let that voice also speak in us is part of the process that I think
yes.
is very gratifying
that
and
is...
wonderful and exciting and all of those things.
Yes, and, you know, that is actually the biggest challenge that we all face when we learn to journey, and that is to keep our mind open to receive whatever they are going to show us, because, you know, the human mind, we have this insane desire, and it seems like a life or death necessity to rationalize everything, to put the pieces together and figure out exactly why this is happening. And so, of course, when we go on a journey, that part of our mind wants to kick in and say, oh, this is probably what it is. And we have to be able to still that part of our mind and stay completely open. I did a journey for someone once that she was waking up spiritually. She was getting really involved in metaphysics and everything, and she thought something that it was because of waking up that she was starting to have all these pains and aches in her bodies, and the light was hurting her eyes, and the sounds were too loud, all these things. And no amount of rationalization would have found what it was, because when I journeyed, she had been born premature, she was in an incubator. And she was, everything hurt. The sheet hurt her skin. The lights were too bright. The sound was too loud. People were poking her and sticking needles in her. And it was a miserable thing. She had actually suffered soul loss right there in that incubator.
Right.
And, of course, that's what the part that of her essence that needed to come back as a soul retrieval. And but, you know, no amount of rationalization would have ever figured that out. We would have found all sorts of reasons, like, oh, it's the it's the chemicals in the air, the pollution that's doing it. It's this,
right.
It's that.
Right.
But that is the value and the power of shamanism.
Right. It's wonderful when you start to have those kinds of experiences. You know, the spirits, one of the basic idea of Michael's vision for the foundation was... was again to help people. He calls it spiritual democracy, but the idea again means that you develop your own personal relationships and connections with the spiritual dimension, and then they teach you. So the foundation can take you to the point where you have, where you're able to more and more strongly connect with your spirits, and then it's up to you once you've connected with these compassionate spirits, because there are spirits that are mixed. There are spirits of the middle world that we don't want to deal with when we're learning, and that's why it's important to have some training, I think. But once you've connected with these spirits, then these compassionate spirits, then they're going to teach you. They're going to teach you all of the methods that you would need if you continue in this process in order to keep healing. But you have the basics, and you know how to access the spirits, and you know what makes your relationship stronger and those kinds of things. So the methods are just very, to know these core methods and these basic methodologies is extremely important to develop the discipline of the shaman. I think a lot of people think that it's just, you know, free-flowing intuition and you just do whatever, but it's quite a discipline and a practice, and then you can have experiences like you're describing where you start working with clients and suddenly you're seeing these little small miracles every day, which is a wonderful thing.
Yes, it is. And it's so important that people understand also that when we talk about spirits, we're not talking about disincarnate spirits on this plane, that you see a clairvoyant bringing messages from a deceased loved one to someone, to a grieving husband or wife, or things like that. Most disincarnate spirits on this plane don't know any more than they knew when they were alive. So what we are actually going into other worlds, other realms, dimensions of existence to be able to contact teachers and healers that are so highly evolved. They're so beyond this plane, and they are compassionate beings who want to help us, and that's amazing. Right. So it's a wonderful thing. Yeah, now, I did want to touch a little bit. Yeah, I did want to touch a little bit on your other talents, because I know that you write songs and a book, and one of your lyrics I just fell in love with, brother to sky, sister to rain, all creation flows in our veins, holy harmony. Tell me more about your music.
Well, interesting, my music and shamanism sort of go hand in hand, because about the time I started getting involved with shamanism, I had been working with that nonprofit educational foundation for many years. And I got to the point where, when looking back, which I realized was a burnout point, you know, a point beyond which I had, nothing to say, I only good things to say about the organization. But in my own path, I'd gotten to a point where what I was doing couldn't take me a next step. But I had no clue what the next step might be. And so I took a sabbatical, like you talked about, and I just thought, what am I supposed to be doing? And I actually had a mystical experience. I woke up one morning, and I heard a voice, and the voice said, feed the soul, give it a voice.
Oh.
And it was so clear. It was just like, that only that phrase, and it was an auditory experience too. And so I thought, okay, I've been asking for the answer. This is an answer. What's that? So what I figured at that point is, well, I guess I better find out how I feed my soul. So I need to ask my soul. So I ended up doing that. This is before I knew anything about shamanism. I ended up doing I ended up really doing a shamanic journey without drums. Down into a cave looking for my soul and the whole the whole thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I had this spontaneous soul retrieval that came, you know, a part of me came back. That's what I realized. But at the time, I thought, this is so weird. I had no clue what happened. It just that something really intense and mystical happened. And so I happened to have a very close friend who said, well, you know, that sounds very shamanic in nature. You should look into that. Uh-huh. And so living in the Bay Area, very privileged, I was able to start going to the workshops of the foundation and, you know, study with Michael and all of that. And this was back in the 90s. And so anyway, so at that point, I was paying attention to what I call nuance, but I was led to pick up an old guitar I had. I just started, you know, plucking out notes. And then I started playing around with lyrics, because I like lyrics and I like words. And then all of a sudden it was like these floodgates opened, and all of these songs started coming to me. So 5 songs came to me in a period of 2 weeks, pretty much fully, you know, and I'm not a musician or anything, so I'm thinking, what is happening? I mean, it was one of those ecstatic experiences that you couldn't just discard. You couldn't just say, oh, well, that's nothing. You know, it was just an overwhelmingly upbeat, powerful, ecstatic, wonderful experience. I don't think I slept for almost 2 weeks. It's just just kept writing songs. And Holy Harmony was one of those that I got when I was standing in line at some fast food place for some kind of a hamburger or something. I'll tell you, it can come anywhere. It can happen anywhere.
Yes, it's amazing how creativity begins to flow.
Yeah, it is. It's just amazing.
We're running out of time. You and I could talk a long time. I'm going to invite you right now to come on the show again sometime in the future, because we have a lot more that we can discuss on here.
Sure, sure.
I want you just to tell people how they can find the foundation and the classes.
Okay, yeah, just go to shamanism.org. So shamanism.org, And there is a lot of information on there about Michael, about the foundation, about the courses, about their articles, et cetera. It's a fairly fully, and so just check that out. And I also wanted just to say for the interest of your readers that Michael Harner is coming out with a new book in April of 2013. It'll be released, and it's called Cave and Cosmos.
And oh, my goodness.
It's going to be taking the decades since he wrote The Way of the Shaman and putting a lot of that together for us. So I hope your readers will look for that, or your listeners.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Susan. I
and
appreciate
you too,
all
Caroline.
The
wonderful.
Okay, thank you. And for all our listeners, I hope that you understand a little bit more about what I've been talking about shamanism. And I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, may the sun kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence. Have a wonderful week. Thank you.